Sharam, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari from the Shri Satya Sai Central Trust. And we are here to continue with our study of Swami's discourses, which were given as part of the 1991 Summer Course series. We had a break last week. We couldn't have the program, given the program in the Mandir getting delayed by more than an hour than the usual time. So I think it's a good idea to go back a little bit and do a little bit of summary of the entire discourse. We are in the second half of the discourse. I wonder if we'll be able to complete it today. But otherwise, I think it would be a good thing to go back to the entire discourse and see what Swami has been telling, because as we go through it, we'll realize that it's beautiful to see the flow and the way Swami is building up the theme from where we started. But before that, I offer most humble pranams on behalf of all of you at Swami's lotus feet, and I invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem. Good evening to you.
Same to you. And just 1 week passed, and it looked like it was a long time before we had this program. And as I was saying, that going through the discourse, it really shows how beautifully Swami is building the theme and kind of introducing new concepts. There's always that merit of playing a small clip and going through it, but when we go through the whole discourse or a good chunk of the discourse, it gives a very beautiful overview of the theme too. So going back to how Swami began this discourse, this concept which Swami started off with by talking of the three Ks, if you could put it that way, the Karanam, Karanam and the Karta. So he says where Karanam are the instruments or the senses. Karanam is the cause for doing anything or whatever we choose to do. And Karta is the one who is the doer. And in that part, Swami goes on to say that the main Karanam or the main reason for whatever we do is the desire which drives us. And then Swami goes on to say that, you know, so all of it lies in the way you orient your desire. You know, right now he says that the desire which is driving the whole thing, the karanam or the cause which is driving your whole life, is sense fulfillment or to, you know, self-aggrandizement in whatever form. But if we can turn this desire, this same very cause, to self-exploration, to know our own self, and Swami says to understand the karanam and who is the real doer. Swami says that's the beginning of the whole journey. Then from there, of course, Swami goes to the point where he talks of how the mind is illumined by the Brahman, and the mind is the one which is the actual processor behind the senses. The senses are merely like windows, but this is the thing which is really driving the understanding behind the senses. And then Swami goes on to say that the real doer is the Brahman, and Swami gives the example of the sun illuminating the moon and the moon bringing light to the earth. Right. But the sun is self-luminescent, and that's how the Brahman too is self-luminescent. Then of course that point where Swami speaks about looking at the senses and asking the question of what is driving them. You know, I am seeing, I am hearing, but what is enabling me to see, what is enabling me to hear?
Right.
And then seeing the difference between the seen and the seer.
Right.
And I think the concept of Drigdrishya Viveka, as we were saying, that how you go layer by layer behind and you come to the point where the intellect is being seen by the Sakshi or the Brahman, and that is the ultimate.
Right.
Because that was the theoretical part. Yeah. Then we had that story which is part of the Kino Upanishad, where I think Brahma comes in the form of a Brahmin, and he gives out a blade of grass and asks the gods, led by Lord Indra, to do anything with that grass, either to burn it or to blow it away or to wet it, and none of them are able to do it. And that entire story, later Swami says that the goddess Uma comes and she says that you're blinded by your ego and you could not recognize the presence of Brahman, so I have come. And Swami says that woman who is a representation of desires, So she comes to teach man to go, to take that journey beyond desires to the Brahman. And from that point, Swami makes that beautiful observation of, you know, what you really, till that point, Swami says that what is being driven by the Brahman will not have the ability to know the Brahman. And Swami gives the beautiful examples of, you know, when you go into a storeroom, you can find all the other objects, but you can't find yourself because, you know, the point of searching is different. And Swami says that these karanams or these instruments are not equipped with the ability to know the subtler Brahman. Then Swami goes on to say the only way you can learn about it or know about it is through devotion. So that's why Swami brings in the angle of love, and Swami says that, you know, that supplication, that surrender is what will actually lead you to understanding that, because no amount of effort will actually take you there, no amount of intellectual reasoning can get you there, because as Swami says, you know, that Brahman is beyond the speech, beyond the ken of reasoning.
Yeah.
Then Swami, I think that's the point we stopped in, did we?
No, like after that, Swami actually begins to instruct the students. So as the context, of course, this entire discourse is being delivered to students at the summer course. So he begins to instruct the students as to like what is the right way in which to use these senses.
Right.
So that Swami begins, there's a turning point in the entire discourse where Swami begins to speak about love, as about devotion to the Lord. So till then it is almost like an abstract discussion of the Keno Upanishad and what it is speaking about. And then he moves towards, of course, this segment too is from the Keno Upanishad, where he begins to speak about the right use of the senses. And Swami sings that one small ditty, right? One small song in this context, right?
And I think there's another point which I missed out. In between, before he comes to the exploration or getting into this inquiry, Swami says, you know, that why are we not doing this, or why are we not able to succeed in this?
Yeah.
What are the three mistakes which we do? Swami says that in different parts of the discourse. Where he says, first of all, you lack the confidence. And that's really interesting, because on one hand you're told that it's not possible with the senses. But at the same time you're saying that don't give up. Don't lose hope that it's not possible. You know, have the confidence, as we said a couple of discourses back. Swami makes that point where he makes that point where men like you have achieved that state before. Individuals who are very much like you have risen, taken themselves to the point where they can know and realize the truth. So have that confidence that you're no less than them and you can achieve it yourself. That confidence is one. And the other thing which Swami said was, you know, look, you're allowing your mind to follow the senses.
Right.
That that hierarchy is not being maintained.
Right.
The mind is meant to use the senses to feel its way around, rather than being dragged by the senses.
So, because Swami also makes a point that the direction in which you are looking is flawed, fundamentally flawed.
Exactly.
Because the senses are always perceiving the outer world.
Right.
Whereas where the treasures are actually present are in the inner world.
Right. And just before Swami comes to the point where he talks about love being the best tool, he says that the other flaw why we are not able, which we do, because of which we are not able to realize, is too much reliance on our own physical and mental strength.
Right.
And our wealth and ego.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You know, because it's very beautiful. Swami is talking about confidence as the first point. And then Swami is saying that don't build your confidence on your physical ability or mental ability or the wealth or the ego. And I think in most of Swami's discourse or any understanding of Swami's philosophy, I think this is a primary thing which we keep in front of us, that whatever you're searching for, whatever you are trying to learn also is actually inside you.
Right.
Like, you know, even when you're talking about devotion and perfection in devotion, or if you're talking about righteousness, you know, the five human qualities which Swami says, Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, it all starts with Swami saying that all of these in their perfect nature is within you, and it's a process of unlearning actually.
Right.
So it's one hand Swami saying that have the confidence because everything is inside you, but don't base your confidence on your physical might and your mental abilities or wealth or ego, because that in many discourses where Swami would say that that is not yours.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Though you are trying to say that I'm confident because I've earned so much, that's never yours. Place your confidence in what is really yours, which is within you.
Yes, actually almost the theme of the discourse is this, or the theme of the Keno Upanishad is like not to base your sense of identity, your sense of, as you said, self-confidence or self-esteem, but essentially your sense of identity, let it not get attached to anything that is ephemeral.
Right.
Like even in a worldly sense, like supposing my confidence is based on my intelligence, and at some point of time I meet somebody who is more intelligent than I am,
right,
which in this world is like totally possible.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's based on some skill of yours, then almost always you're going to find somebody who is better than you.
Right.
And that destroys, especially for, you know, the, I think it's a very important lesson for students to carry, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you cannot base it on something like this. And so then it becomes a conundrum. On what do I base my confidence on?
Right.
It becomes a very, you know, so we are, it's something non-intuitive for us.
Mm.
We derive our sense of self-esteem from our intellect, from our talents, from our skills or our achievements. Now, if Swami is asking us to set all these aside, then on what is this self-confidence based? That's a...
In fact, once we were having a discussion on the difference between self-respect and ego. You know, where do you draw the line and how do you differentiate between the two? Because it lightly spoken about, both sound very similar.
Yeah.
You know, very difficult to differentiate. One of the things which we came up with, whether it really is a differentiating factor, maybe we'll have to think about that. But one thing what we thought is, if self-respect is what is driving your pride,
right,
or, you know, your guarding yourself is based out of self-respect, you will have the same amount of respect for the person in front of you.
Mm, mm.
But ego is not like that. You know, as you're saying, when you place your ego on your achievements, attainments, or your intellectual abilities, there is always that comparison.
Mm.
You're always telling that I'm more intelligent than you, or, you know, I'm more stronger than you. There's always that comparative thing, that so when it is out of ego, there'll always be like, yeah, I can be, you know, I can show off more in front of this person. I better be a little, you know, I'll curl my tail here in this person. But when it comes out of self-respect, you have the ability to look at everybody and say that I respect myself as much as I respect you for what you are.
Yeah.
Because there is always that leveling agent which is inside.
Right. And also you can distinguish between achievements that we reach by the root of the ego and achievements that are got by self-respect, right? So whenever you're trying to see, the ego is something that is always, you know, hungry. You can never appease it, right? So there is never a sense of being fulfilled. You're always left feeling completely exhausted, right? You're running a race against your own self, right? But when it comes to self-respect, it's completely an expression, right?
The
achievement is just an expression of who you are. And you feel very complete. You just look at it and it's whole and complete, just the way it is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that you can distinguish it, you know, very easily. And it happens in so many things that we do, right?
Like, right. Yeah, I think the question is about, you know, when you're in a state where you're becoming self-defensive,
yeah,
especially when somebody is attacking you,
yeah,
and you're trying to guard yourself,
right.
That question of, you know, is my defense coming from ego or is it coming from self-respect?
Hmm.
You know, that is the confusion which most of us have.
Yeah.
And many occasions where I've heard students sharing incidents where if you just look at the incident, it'll look like it's an act of arrogance.
Right.
Or act of, you know, insubordination or whatever.
Mm.
But Swami would come and appreciate them and say that, you know, what you did was right because it did not come from ego.
Oh.
For instance, apparently, we're talking to an old student who was saying that a senior was trying to make him do jobs which was a little menial.
Mm.
And was, you know, he was asking, making him do that to put him down.
Yeah.
Right? So at one point, this person, you know, this boy got up and said, "Sir, I think there are other people who can do this."
Hmm.
You know, in the hostel, he said, there are workers who have been, you know, assigned this job. I think you should ask them to do it. And he said, it's not that I can't do it or I won't do it, but I think it's not my job.
Right.
And that elder was very, very offended. And he said, I'll go and complain to Swami that you're, you know, you're disrespectful to me, and I'll ensure that you face the thing. So this boy was sure that this news is going to go to Swami, and he's going to, you know, face it that evening. And this evening, this boy was a bhajan group, member of the bhajan group. So he was sitting in the bhajan hall. And that evening, Swami comes to him and Swami says, what happened this morning? Okay. So this boy felt that, you know, it's not right to defend himself. Because let Swami judge. You know, he was saying that I was not sure. Maybe I was arrogant. Maybe I should have been a little more patient. So he just kept quiet. He said, Swami, you know everything. If I've done anything wrong, please forgive me. So Swami said, no, you've not done anything wrong. Swami said, what you did was right. Okay, and then Swami said, what you did was right because you did not do it from ego.
Right.
And, you know, as you said, I think it's an individual who has to judge whether it's coming from self-respect or ego. And I think maybe it's a different discussion altogether. How do we differentiate and how do we stop ourselves when it is coming from the ego?
Right.
And as I said, one of the ways in which you can really differentiate it is the self-respect that you have will reflect in the respect that you have for the others. That, you know, that the same respect which you will give for the others is what you will expect them to give you. Then that in the discourse, Swami goes on to speak about how you look at the body. Because Swami is saying that most of the problem comes with the approach that we have to the human body. And there's an interesting part where Swami says it's valueless, at the same time it's valuable. It's valueless because it's mrinmaya, it's made of dust, it is ephemeral. But it is valuable because it's like the iron safe which has got, which stores in it the most precious of jewels. So you give it the respect that it is due, but at the same time don't celebrate it as it's the, you know, be all and end all of things. Then Swami asks the question, you know, how long do you tend to the body? How long do you take care of the body? Swami says, as long as the truth is realized. And, you know, and the perspective is so different in the sense, like, you're still taking care of the body. You don't stop taking care of the body, but you're clear of why you're doing it. You know, the whole discourse, Swami is constantly drawing our attention to that, you know, the cause, the reason, the karanam, as Swami said. Now, it's not that we don't have a cause in what we're doing every day, but the whole journey starts with tweaking that cause. You know, the way you approach life changes when that cause changes. Many times I think of this, you know, a lot of youngsters these days, the suicidal tendency is increasing. You know, when at a point when you find that there is nothing to go forward to, you know, that love is not forthcoming or there's nothing more to achieve. You know, in a lot of Western countries that's happening. You know, there's a saturation. There is no growth left, you know, and they feel that, you know, there's no point in living. So I think when you're talking about a cause like this, you're talking about milking out your human existence and say that, you know, jantu nam narajanma durlabham, and Swami would say this, that namasmarana is such an important thing. I mean, even if you're completely bedridden and you can't do anything else, you will still consider life as precious. Because it, you know, the understanding with which you can do what you can do in a human birth is so very precious. And that's why that cause is so important. And Swami is going on repeating that. As I said, I think in one of the discussions we had, once I was just Googling and trying to find out in a discourse, what does Swami say is the purpose of life? There was an entire discourse on that. Probably in a very random sentence, Swami mentions the purpose of life is to go back to the source or something like that. But 99% of the discourse was why it's important to ask the question, what's the purpose of life? You know, that's all, that actually covers most of your journey rather than, you know, finding the answer. And I think that's precisely where we had stopped last time, that story, of course, and then the beautiful song which Swami sang at the end of it. So I think, shall we go to the next clip?
We'll begin with Swami's clip.
And we'll discuss what Swami has to say after that.
We must also understand the significance of speech. Speech is highly sacred.
Jayadevudu cheppadu, jihve రసగ్ని మధురత్యేత్తం సత్యం హితం త్వాం పరమం వదామి. ఆ వర్ణయేత మధురాక్షరాణి ఓ రుచి ఎరిగిన నాలుక.
జయదేవ సెడ్, ఓ టంగ్, హూ నోస్ టు డిస్టింగ్విష్ టేస్ట్.
ఓ పవిత్రమైన నాలుక,
ఓ సీక్రెట్ టంగ్,
దివ్యమైన వాక్కుతో కూడిన నాలుక,
ఓ టంగ్ ఆఫ్ సీక్రెట్ స్పీచ్,
వాణిస్త్రీని అభివృద్ధి పరిచేటువంటి నాలుక,
ఓ టంగ్ దట్ ఎన్హాన్సెస్ స్పీచ్,
సరస్వతి స్వరూపమైన నాలుక,
ఓ టంగ్ ది ఎంబాడిమెంట్ ఆఫ్ గాడెస్ సరస్వతి.
నీవు ఇంత పవిత్రమైనటువంటి నాలుకవు, ఇంత అపవిత్రమైనటువంటి మాటలకు ఉపయోగపెడుతున్నావు.
యూ ఆర్ సచ్ ఎ సీక్రెట్ టంగ్ బట్ యు ఆర్ ఇండల్జింగ్ ఇన్ ఇంప్యూర్ టాక్.
ఇది నీకు మంచిది కాదు.
దిస్ ఇస్ నాట్ గుడ్ ఫర్ యూ.
దీని పాప పరిహార నిమిత్తమే గోవింద దామోదర మాధవేతి అని స్మరణ చేయమని చెప్పి బోధించింది.
యాజ్ అన్ అటోన్మెంట్ ఫర్ దీస్ సిన్స్ ఇట్ వాస్ ఆస్క్డ్ టు చాంట్ గోవింద దామోదర మాధవ.
ఎంత త్యాగము నాలుకకు.
వాట్ అ సెన్స్ ఆఫ్ సాక్రిఫైస్ ద టంగ్ హ్యాస్.
ఎంతటి గౌరవము నాలుకకు.
వాట్ ఆనర్ ద టంగ్ పొసెసెస్.
ఎంతటి మర్యాద నాలుకకు.
వాట్ రెస్పెక్ట్ ఇట్ కమాండ్స్.
ఎంతటి త్యాగము నాలుకకు.
వాట్ సాక్రిఫైస్ ద టంగ్ హ్యాస్.
ఎంతటి విశాలము నాలుకకు.
వాట్ మెగ్నానిమిటీ ద టంగ్ హ్యాస్.
దీనిని చక్కగా మనం విచారించాలి.
వి నీడ్ టు ఇన్క్వైర్ ఇన్ టు దిస్ కీన్లీ.
నాలుక ఒక ఫలమునేమైనా భుజించడానికి ప్రయత్నం చేసినప్పుడు అది పుల్లగా ఉంటుంటే ఇది జఠరాగ్నికి పంపటం న్యాయం కాదు.
ఈవెన్ వైల్ ట్రైంగ్ టు ఈట్ అ ఫ్రూట్ ఇఫ్ ఇట్స్ ఫౌండ్ సోర్ ద టంగ్ కన్క్లూడ్స్ దట్ ఇట్ ఇస్ంట్ రైట్ టు సెండ్ ఇట్ టు ద జఠరాగ్ని ద డైజెస్టివ్ ఫోర్స్ ఇన్ ద స్టమక్.
జఠరాగ్ని ఏది అహం వైశ్వానరో భూత ప్రాణినాం దేహమాసిత ప్రాణాపాన సమాయుక్త ప్రచాన్యం చతుర్విధం అహం వైశ్వానరో భూత. ఆ భగవంతుడు వైశ్వాన రూపంలో ఉంటున్నాడు.
వాట్ ఈస్ జఠరాగ్ని? గాడ్ హింసెల్ఫ్ ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ ద ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఫైర్ వైశ్వానర ఇన్ ద బాడీ.
భగవంతుడుకు నైవేద్యం చేయవలసినటువంటి ఫలం కాదు ఇది.
దిస్ ఫ్రూట్ ఇస్ నాట్ వర్ది ఆఫ్ బీయింగ్ ఆఫర్డ్ టు ద లార్డ్.
ఇది మధురమైనటువంటి ఫలం కాదు ఇది అని ఆ యొక్క ఫలమును ఓ భూదేవత నీవే దీన్ని సృష్టించావు నీవే దీన్ని అందుకోని భూమిపై ఉమ్మి వేస్తుంది.
దిస్ ఫ్రూట్ ఇస్ నాట్ స్వీట్ ఓ గాడెస్ ఆఫ్ ఎర్త్ యూ హ్యావ్ క్రియేటెడ్ దిస్ ఫ్రూట్ హెన్స్ యూ యాక్సెప్టెడ్ బ్యాక్ సేయింగ్ సో ఇట్ స్పిట్స్ ఇట్ డౌన్.
అదే ఫలమే మధురంగా ఉంటుంటే ఓ మధురమైనటువంటి మాధవ ఈ మధురాన్ని నీవు అనుభవించు మధురాధిపతి మధురం మధురం.
హ్యాడ్ ది సేమ్ ఫ్రూట్ బీన్ స్వీట్ ఇట్ వుడ్ హావ్ సెడ్ ఓ స్వీట్ లార్డ్ లార్డ్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ స్వీట్నెస్ మే యూ రిలిష్ దిస్ స్వీట్నెస్.
కనుక తాను ఏమాత్రము అనుభవించదు.
హెన్స్ ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ ఎంజాయ్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్.
మంచిని భగవంతునికి ఇస్తుంది చెడ్డను ప్రకృతికి విసిరివేస్తుంది.
ఇట్ ఆఫర్స్ వాట్ ఇస్ గుడ్ టు గాడ్ అండ్ ద బ్యాడ్ ఇస్ టర్న్ బ్యాక్ టు నేచర్.
ఇంత త్యాగం కలిగినటువంటి ఈ నాలుక.
దిస్ టంగ్ హ్యాస్ సచ్ ఎ క్వాలిటీ ఆఫ్ సాక్రిఫైస్.
ఎంత ఓపిక.
హౌ పేషెంట్ ఇట్ ఈస్.
ఏమిటి ఆ ఓపిక.
వాట్ పేషెన్స్ ఇస్ ఇట్.
దంతములు వంటి 36 ఇది సూటి అంగుల వంటి దంతములు ఉండగా దీని మధ్య లోపల మెత్తని నాలుక ఎంత చక్కగా జాగ్రత్తగా మెలుగుతూ ఉండాలి.
దేర్ ఆర్ 36 షార్ప్ నైఫ్ లైక్ టీత్ బట్ ఇన్ దేర్ మిడ్స్ట్ ద సాఫ్ట్ టంగ్ మేనేజెస్ సో స్కిల్ఫుల్లీ అండ్ కేర్ఫుల్లీ.
కనుక ఈ 36 దంతములు కేవలం ఒక సూటిగా అంబుల వలె ఉంటున్నటువంటి దాని మధ్య లోపల చాలా జాగ్రత్తగా వెలుగుతూ ఉంటుంది.
ద టంగ్ మూవ్ సో కేర్ఫుల్లీ ఇన్ బిట్వీన్ దీస్ 36 టీత్ దట్ ఆర్ షార్ప్ లైక్ యారోస్.
దీన్ని విభీషణుడు కూడా చెప్పాడు హనుమంతుని దగ్గర.
ద సేమ్ థింగ్ వాస్ టోల్డ్ బై విభీషణ టు హనుమాన్ టూ.
హనుమంత,
ఓ హనుమాన్,
ఈ రాక్షసుల వంటి ఈ దంతపుల మధ్య నేను నామను స్మరించేటువంటి నాలుక వలె జీవిస్తున్నాను.
Among these demons who are like the teeth, I am existing as the tongue that chants the name of the Lord. If I am careless in any movement this way or that way, even for a moment, my life will be destroyed between these teeth.
కనుక ఈ నాశనము కాక పురమే ఈ నామాన్ని స్మరిస్తున్నాను రూపాన్ని కూడా దర్శింపచేయమని చెప్పని హనుమంతుని ప్రార్థించాడు.
I am chanting the name. Help me also to have the darshan of the form before the destruction. Vibhishana thus pleaded with Hanuman.
అప్పుడు హనుమంతుడు చెప్పాడు.
దెన్ హనుమాన్ రిప్లైడ్,
ఓ విభీషణ,
ఓ విభీషణ,
నీవు కేవలము ఒక నాలుకగాను ఈ రాక్షసును దంతముగాను పోల్చుకుంటున్నావు.
యు హావ్ కంపేర్డ్ యువర్ సెల్ఫ్ టు ద టంగ్ అండ్ ద డెమన్స్ టు ద టీత్.
నిజమే, కానీ దంతమును ముందు రాలుతాయా నాలుక ముందు రాలుతుందా?
ఇట్ ఇస్ ట్రూ ఇండీడ్, బట్ డు ద టీత్ ఫాల్ ఫస్ట్ ఆర్ ద టంగ్?
దంతములు ముందు రాలిపోతాయి, భయపడనక్కర్లేదు.
ద టీత్ ఫాల్స్ అపార్ట్ ఫస్ట్, సో యూ నీడ్ నాట్ ఫియర్.
నాలుక ఎప్పటికీ రాలదు.
ద టంగ్ నెవర్ ఫాల్స్.
కనుక నీవు నాలుక వంటి వాడు, నీవు రామ సన్నిధిని చేరుతావు.
సో యూ ఆర్ లైక్ ద టంగ్, యూ విల్ రీచ్ లార్డ్ రామాస్ ప్రెసెన్స్.
ఈ రాక్షసులే దంతములంతా ముందుగానే కూలిపోతాయి.
దీస్ డీమన్స్ ఆర్ లైక్ టీత్ దాట్ వుడ్ ఫాల్ షార్ట్లీ.
చెప్పాడు.
So you need not worry. Saying thus, he gave him courage.
కనుకనే నాలుక ఇంత పవిత్రమైనటువంటిది.
So tongue is very sacred.
ఇంత సున్నితమైనటువంటిది.
So very tender.
ఇంతే కాదు, గౌరవాన్ని అందుకునేటువంటిది.
Not only that, it commands respect.
ఏమిటి ఈ గౌరవము?
What is this respect?
ఈ నాలుక బజారు కుక్కల వలె ఆ ఇంటికి ఈ ఇంటికి తిరిగేటువంటిది కాదు.
This tongue does not roam from house to house like a street dog.
తన ఇంటి లోపల తాను ఉండి పెదవులకు తలుపులకు బయట కూడా తాను రాదు, అంత గౌరవంగా జీవిస్తున్నావు.
It stays at home and does not even step out of the door, the lips. It leads its life with so much dignity.
చూసావా, ఎప్పుడైనా ఎన్ని మాటలు మాట్లాడుతుంది కానీ ఒక్కతూరైనా తలుపులు దాటి బయటికి ఏమైనా వస్తుందా?
It may speak any number of words, but does it step out of the doors even once?
అది చాలా గౌరవంగానే మర్యాదగానే రాణి వలె జీవిస్తుంటుంది.
It lives with such dignity and respect like a queen.
కనుకనే నాలుకకు చాలా గౌరవం అందిస్తున్నారు.
Therefore the tongue is given so much respect.
ఇంతే కాదు, లోకంలో ఏమైనా చెడ్డ పనులు చేసినప్పుడు పశువా అని అతన్ని దూషిస్తుంది.
Not only this, if a wrong is done in society, it reprimands them saying, are you an animal?
మంచి పని చేసినప్పుడు నీవు పశుపతి వంటి వాడవురా అని వర్ణిస్తుంది.
When good actions are performed, it praises saying, oh, you are like God, Pashupati.
కనుక దూషణకు భూషణకును గౌరవాన్ని అందించేటువంటిది ఈ నాలుక.
So it is the tongue that gives respect to both praise and censure.
అతి పవిత్రమైన నాలుకను మనం పవిత్రమైన దీంట్లోనూ ప్రవేశపెట్టాలి.
దేర్ఫార్ అ టంగ్ యాజ్ సీక్రెట్ యాజ్ దిస్ మస్ట్ బి యూటిలైజ్డ్ ఫర్ ద సీక్రెట్ పర్పసెస్ అలోన్.
ఇది ఉపనిషత్తుల యొక్క వాక్యములు. ఎంత సులభమైనటువంటి వాక్యములు, ఎంత సున్నితమైనటువంటి వాక్యములు, ఎంత మధురమైన వాక్యములు.
దీస్ ఆర్ ద వర్డ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఉపనిషత్స్. హౌ సింపుల్ ఆర్ దీస్ వర్డ్స్, హౌ సీక్రెట్ అండ్ స్వీట్ దే ఆర్.
ఇంత వాక్యములు కలిగినటువంటి ఉపనిషత్తులు ఈనాడు మనం విస్మరిస్తున్నాము.
ది ఉపనిషత్స్ విచ్ కంటైన్ సచ్ స్వీట్ వర్డ్స్ ఆర్ బీయింగ్ ఫర్గాటన్ బై అస్ టుడే.
దట్ వాస్ ది ఐ థింక్ ది 9th క్లిప్ ఆఫ్ దట్ డిస్కోర్స్ అండ్ యాస్ వి హెర్డ్ త్రూ ప్రిడామినెంట్లీ అబౌట్ ద టంగ్. Because I think the previous one, Swami started talking, Swami mentioned about how the Upanishads actually describe about how the senses have to be used.
Yes.
I think that's the point which Swami left us in the last week. So as I think even in the 1990 series, Swami spoke at good length about controlling the tongue. Right. And how, you know, the I think Swami gave a very beautiful analogy then, like how he said when you have horses tied to the chariot, the horses are controlled by, you know, by I think they are harnessed through the mouth.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Swami said similarly, like, you know, senses are always compared to the horses.
Right.
So Swami said, so the senses are controlled and managed by starting with the control of the mouth.
Yeah, I think like Swami, many of the things that in discourses when Swami speaks or even when he counsels us, I think one of the most important things Swami emphasizes is the way we speak.
Right.
Right. So Swami is very famous saying that, you know, you can always, you cannot always oblige, but you can speak obligingly.
Right.
So it is like, you know, that is the first window to a person, right?
Right.
Like the way the person speaks, right? So it is like you may be carrying a mass of thoughts in your head, with, you know, inside the feelings are that rich, but finally it is what you speak is what people, you know, judge you by.
Right.
So there's a lot of importance to speech.
Right.
In fact, this section, like last time we were speaking about this, that even in the Keno Upanishad as well as Swami's discourse on the Keno Upanishad, this particular section, it deals with actually the, as we said, the right use of senses, right? And it I think this is the basis, like for in the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, when they speak about Yama, Niyama, the Ashtanga Yoga, like I think it has its origins here, right? One of the, that the senses, they need to be conditioned and used in the right fashion. I think that this is the, you know, starting point of that.
In fact,
good.
Yeah, talking about Yama and Niyama, I think in one discourse Swami says that, you know, the why both are important, Yama and Niyama. Swami says, you know, Yama is the discipline that you keep for yourself.
Right.
Right. Even in the absence of anybody else in a room left alone, you follow Yama.
Okay.
Niyama is when you go out to the society, when you interact with people.
Okay.
So he says it's a twin discipline.
Oh, okay.
You have to follow this as well as that. That's why when you talk about Yama, I think Satya and all of those things, self-discipline comes into picture.
Yes.
And Niyama is about, you know, how do you interact? How do you speak lovingly?
Right.
That's actually.
So the one way of classifying Yama and Niyama is simply like, Yama is the don'ts.
I'm sorry. I think it's the other way around. Yama is the one which you practice in the presence of others.
I see.
Niyama is the lines that you draw for yourself.
For yourself.
Right.
Okay.
Because that's why I think when Swami speaks about Yama, he speaks about those five things. Satya, Ahimsa, Asteya, Aparigraha.
Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, non-stealing, Brahmacharya.
Aparigraha and Brahmacharya.
Yes.
So that is the disciplines when you go out into the society.
Into society.
Niyama is what you keep for yourself.
Correct.
Right.
Shaucha, Santosha.
Right.
Shaucha means like personal hygiene, cleanliness, and then contentment.
Right.
So these are, so to speak, your private world. Right? And then the Yama is, okay, that's a very good distinction.
Right.
And so as we see, like this is part of that. So Swami is placing a lot of emphasis, like a lot of this, this section is completely devoted to just the tongue. And on the one hand, speech and its various other functions.
Right.
So in fact, I was reminded, you know, when we were young, we were taught the importance of like, what you say, why it is so important, like why you have to have a lot of awareness about what you are saying. And the favorite story that our elders would speak about is the story of Kumbhakarna. So the Kumbhakarna and Vibhishna and Ravana, they are all meditating, and they're meditating on Lord Shiva, right? So they're doing intense tapas and they're waiting for a boon from Lord Shiva, right? And Kumbhakarna, who is already possessing enormous strength, given his huge, you know, physical body, he would have been absolutely invincible with, you know. So that had the devas worried, and they say that. So when they approach the lords for counsel, they say there's only one access to Kumbhakarna, and that is through his tongue. So they actually pray to Goddess Saraswati to, you know, manage his tongue. And so when Lord Shiva asks for the boon, he asks for the boon of like sleep.
Right. So I think there's a slip, literally slip sounds like a slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
I think he asks for, there are actually 3-4 versions of it, you know,
what he
meant to ask and how he ended up asking.
Yeah. So he ends up asking for, so that's how the elders would keep, you know, reminding us, be very, very critically aware what you're saying. Right. And even, you know, with Swami, I recall one of the biggest trainings I think that I got, you know, in my interaction with Bhagwan, is to be extremely responsible for what you're saying. Right. Because many a time, there was something you would say and Swami would ask, how do you know? Right? On what basis? You had to be very responsible. There's, you couldn't let a loose word in. You had to be very particular about appropriateness in that surrounding, whether it was a right thing to say. You know, that, and Swami used to remind us of that Tyagaraja Kirtana also. In his Samayaniki Tagu Mata. So,
Mataladin.
Yeah, right. So, in he, you know, it's so much emphasis on what is the right thing to say at the right time, you know. So, the speech is almost singularly something that is very important.
We're working on a Kodai video where Swami is talking to students. He's giving a discourse. Very, very beautiful and very practically, you know, as you were saying, that the importance of the way you conduct yourself in the society, in a gathering. Swami's talking about common sense. Okay, Swami's saying, what is common sense? This is precisely what you were saying. You know? Swami said, what, when, why, where, and how. The ability to feature in all of these and then act accordingly. Swami says, and then Swami goes on to speak about what you speak. Okay, and so beautifully Swami saying that, you know, there are traditionally some things you don't speak about when someone's eating.
Right.
And then Swami goes on to say, you know, there are some people, he was giving example, you know, like in Kodaikanal, you're sitting and eating, boy comes and serves. Okay, and I think apparently it happened, or Swami was referring to something. Swami said, you know, while serving, that person said, no, vomiting is coming. Swami said, how can you say that? You know, see, okay, you are having a problem, but all the others are sitting and eating.
Yes.
You don't talk of such things in that. So just say, I'm full, or I can't eat, or excuse yourself. You know, that's not the point where you describe your, you know, your problems with your stomach or something like when others are eating.
Yeah.
And similarly, Swami says, you know, don't make faces when someone's serving food. You know, if you don't like it, you can just say, you know, I'm done with it, please, you know, enough. Don't make faces when someone's serving food, or while eating, and if the taste is bad, don't make faces. Or don't make comments when people are sitting with you and eating. Because tastes are different. They might be enjoying it and, you know, so simple things. But you know, it comes down to the point of what Swami would very often describe as culture.
Yes.
You know, almost every summer course starts with the first discourse having a good amount of it on the aspect of culture and Sanskriti. And Swami would, you know, beautiful one-liner define it as, regard and respect for others is culture. Concern for others is culture. So all of this, if you come to know, you know, when you're sitting in a gathering, all the while being aware of the fact that the others are around, and I should not put others into any kind of discomfort, even the mildest. And you are constantly thinking of that and then acting. And that automatically becomes perfect action.
I remember, you know, Swami used to instruct us in this, what I mentioned some time ago, that you cannot always oblige, but you can always speak obligingly. I think there cannot be any more important management lesson than that. Right? Many of us, you know, like sometimes Swami would say, that when you're refusing somebody, like, don't say no, you know, I cannot do it. Say, always find a way, like it leaves the other person with a back door and you also escape. And Swami used to say, yukti, you know, you should have that knack. And I think it's a skill that you develop over time, but Swami used to place a lot of emphasis on this.
No, I remember one of my teachers in school used to say that. The Indian tradition of the past, suppose a neighbor comes and asks you, do you have sugar? It used to be a very common thing. You know, they would come with a small container, and when they urgently need something, instead of buying from the shop, they would come to the neighbor and ask, can I borrow some sugar from you? So if they come and ask you for, say, sugar, and you don't have sugar, so they will not say that, no, I can't give you, or no, it's not there.
Right.
So if somebody comes and asks, can I have some sugar? They will reply with, would you like to have some salt? Which means they don't have sugar.
They don't have sugar.
Right? You know, that is the tradition of, you should never say no to the person who is asking. Even if you're in a situation where no is the answer that you have to give. So they would say that that's the amount of politeness. Saying no is very rude.
Right. Because I remember this, you know, once some person, a devotee, had come to me and she was sharing this. She was saying that she was at that time in a very difficult position in her job because her boss, like, you know, he was asking her to do something unethical. And like, being Swami's devotee, like, she just didn't want to do it. Right. And she said, you know, I'm afraid that given, you know, how much he expects from me, like this performance, I'm pretty sure if I say no, that you know, I could lose my job. Which is when the first thing that I remembered, I said, like, Swami always says this, cannot always oblige, but you can always speak obligingly, right? So
right.
we have to, and that Swami plays that emphasis totally on us,
right.
because you can pray to Swami for His guidance, but I think the onus is on us that if you cannot, then you have to find a way to
right.
say it sweetly.
I remember one of the devotees mentioning this, General Mahadevan.
Mm.
You know, he would very often narrate this in Swami's presence,
mm.
that after he had retired from the army, they had offered him a very lucrative position in the government,
mm.
in the public services, chief executive, secretary to the government of
mm-hmm.
Tamil Nadu or something like that. A very, mm-hmm. very lucrative position which comes with all the other problems of recommendations and all of that, you know.
Yeah.
So it came to him and he came running to Swami because he was scared of all of this. He said, Swami, in the army it's a completely different thing. It's a different culture, but this is like right into the den of politics.
Mm.
So he came to Swami and Swami said, see, look at the amount of good that you can do if you take a position like this.
Mm.
So Swami said, I would like you to take it. And Swami said, I'm retiring you, in Swami's own beautiful play of words.
Mm.
So he goes and takes up that position, and from the next day, problem starts.
Mm.
You know, gets calls from the chief minister's office, the minister's office, constantly saying that, recommending people for positions. And he being an army man, he said, no, I can't do that, and this is not right, and this is, I will not entertain such things and all that. So he gets into a lot of problems with the ministers, and finally he comes to Swami and he says, Swami, I don't want this job, I'm getting into all kinds of problems. Then Swami gives him the same advice.
Hmm.
He said, what do I always say? Don't always oblige, but you can always speak obligingly. And Swami told him, see, next time when they call you,
hmm.
you say, definitely, sir, I'll try my best.
Hmm.
Okay? Instead of saying, no, I will not do it,
yes.
you say, I'll try my best. And, you know, he would say that, you know, when you say, I'll try my best is the line I draw. Right? And that is within the confines of the ethical principles that I have for myself.
Right.
So when you say, I'll try my best, you're not being dishonest, you're being
yeah.
honest, but you're just putting it across, in as Swami says, in a very obliging manner. And then Swami told him this, see, so finally, if that person gets the job, he will think that you tried your best and he got the job.
Right.
If he doesn't get the job, that person will think that you tried your best, but still he couldn't make it.
Right.
And Swami said, you do that. And really, it's such a practical
yeah.
philosophy in that sense.
And in fact, it also occurs to me that as much emphasis Swami used to place on speech, he used to place perhaps more importance on silence too.
Right.
So Brother Satyajit, who had the privilege of serving Bhagwan for many years, he was on sharing that soon after Bhagwan blessed him with the opportunity of staying in the residence with him and attending to his physical needs. He was saying that there was a period of almost 1,000 days, perhaps we were talking about 3 years.
3 years.
Right? When Swami almost, there was no exchange of words between them. And furthermore, Swami had very, very strictly told him that you should speak to anyone in the residence. You should speak only when it is absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You should completely avoid any wastage of words, or so to speak, wastage of breath itself. Right? And he says that that period, while at the same time being very, very difficult, right, it was also the most instructive period of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the amount of introspection and the way he could perceive, all the mind slowing down, all his tendencies, or literally the senses withdrawing in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He could perceive the enormous change that this brings. And in fact, when I joined here for the institute for my MBA, it really struck me the number of my classmates, as well as the especially the youngsters from school, they used to have this discipline of maunam,
mm-hmm.
The maintaining silence the entire day. And I tried, on several occasions, and I was completely new to the system. And believe me, the amount of effort it used to take. So I cannot imagine doing that for, 3 years. That's literally like being in a monastery with
right.
absolute reign of silence. In fact, once Swami in a discourse, first he chided all of us students, saying that all of you are now, completely given to talking irresponsibly, talking far more than you need to. You should all maintain silence and speak only the least amount necessary. And of course, like many of us, we wanted to please Swami, but again, as best as we could, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there was one student named Shri Krishna, right? And this student took this lesson completely to heart. And it really, you know, everyone began admiring him for that, for his ability to completely rein in his speech. So much so that one day, like Swami, you know, during his discourse, after his discourse, and the student was sitting somewhere close to Bhagwan, Swami actually called him and, you know, gave him his tumbler of mm-hmm. water to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, "This is for you as a gift." Like, that's a very, very rare blessing, rare gift from Bhagwan. And we could see afterwards Swami's interactions with that student, because he obeyed Swami's instructions implicitly. Swami said, "Curtail your speech." He just did that, like that. Swami said it, and that's it. That was for me a very big lesson, and like I could clearly see, you know, how much Swami places emphasis on using your speech responsibly.
Right. Yeah, in fact, I think as you were saying that the very fact that if we are ready to take responsibility for whatever we say, and say that I will tell only things which I really mean, I think 80% of our talk will reduce.
Right?
Like Chinnakatha with Swami beautifully used to narrate of Socrates, person coming to Socrates with you know, rumors about his students.
Yes.
And he says, "Does it pass the filter of four? You know, are you sure of what it is, and is it beneficial? And you know, will it hurt anybody?" I think there are four filters that he says.
Yeah.
When all our rumor mongering is gone, then right? If I have to tell you only things which I'm absolutely sure of, I think Hari, I will not be telling you most of the things, right?
Yeah.
Because most of what we speak is hearsay. We, you know, especially given the current situation of the social media, you know, all of it is hearsay. And you know, before you could really get to the truth, I mean, as they say, rumor has traveled across half the globe before truth can put on its shoes. And I think it's much, much more pronounced now.
You know, the whole tradition of weighing your facts.
Right,
and even being very conscious of your own bias while you speak. So that has, I think, completely been abandoned.
In fact, there was one of the media barons was speaking about this, and he was telling how even the traditional print newspapers are being drawn into this.
Yeah,
because you're saying that earlier they would be like, they would have their sources which would come and give them the news.
Yes,
and then they would send out their reporters to find out, you know, the ground report. So invariably, it will take about a couple of days before they get all the facts. Because they have one of the important media principles is you don't publish anything till you speak to all the parties involved, including the person who is being you know, accused in the situation. So that would take about 3 days. But what was happening was the other media houses which were coming in, they were into this race of sensationalism of who's publishing the news first. So he was saying that, you know, even the traditional print media is being forced to do this, you know, pulled into this race, because if you're publishing 90 news articles like that, probably 70 is true and 20 is a miss, right? So, I mean, eventually it comes to show that, you know, these people are getting your news faster than, you know, these traditional houses.
Yeah. You want to be first off the block, but even if you're inaccurate, the apology is published in some, like, very remote corner of the...
The font size is so much more reduced. So I think it's a very important thing which Swami is saying, even, you know, in talking, when Swami speaks about, compares the tongue to the to a queen. He says, you know, that's the honor the tongue maintains. And... That's really a takeaway from this clip which we played, where Swami is saying that honor your words, honor the words that you give. Right.
And I think, like, it's also important to mention one last thing in that Vibhishana, his conversation with Hanuman, where he says that, he says that my life is so difficult and I have to live amongst, like, the tongue amongst these sharp teeth. And Hanuman saying that the teeth will fall off and the tongue will stay. I it's a really beautiful comparison, like how Swami is advising us that you should stand for the truth no matter what.
Right.
Because ultimately truth will triumph. It's a very beautiful allegory. I've never heard that before.
And of course, Swami speaks of the other function of the tongue also, where it says that, you know, it decides what is good for the body.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, that's again a very beautiful thing. Because you're talking about the dual function of the tongue. One is taste and one is speech.
Mm.
And in one way, you constantly think, are my words good for the people who are going to hear it?
Yes.
And on the other hand, you ask yourself, is what is going through the body, through the tongue, is good for the body?
Yes, yes.
Right.
And finally, I think Swami is very beautiful comparison of how the tongue, like it accomplishes so many stupendous tasks, but he says you don't see it outside finally. And he says dignity actually lies in not seeking attention while doing great works.
Right.
So, and Swami summarizes, elsewhere, he says, do all but be nothing. It's a beautiful way of, it's a very striking way of relating this moral.
So keep the tongue out situation only for emote icons. Don't do it in real time. But, it's never too much of emphasis when you're talking about the control of the tongue, because Swami has given so much importance to that, as you're saying.
Absolutely.
When we were students, the importance Swami gave to silence, the importance Swami gave to
right speech,
about respectful speech, and about what you eat. In fact, the way Swami would tell, interact, many times Swami would say that defines your culture, that defines your learning.
Yes.
The more learned you are, the more humble your speech will be.
And the very cardinal principle Swami used to repeat often in the discourses, Satyam Bruyat, Priyam Bruyat, Na Bruyat, Satyam Apriyam.
Right.
Speak what is truth, speak what is pleasant, but never speak the unpleasant truth, to hurt with the intention of hurting someone else.
And I think that will itself be an enough exercise in discrimination to know what is the right thing to be told.
Yeah.
And if we really do that, I think automatically our speech
will
be reduced.
It truly is a sadhana in itself. I've undergone that journey and training that Swami gives in that respect. In that sense, I was fortunate to have a friend who was very close to Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through his experiences that I realized, and his interaction with Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily in some of them I used to be by his side, and that it's through them that I learned, how important right speech is to Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in fact, Swami would do that, put you in a situation and put you in a spot and see if you're able to tell the right thing.
Yes, yes.
At that time, and probably, I don't know whether it was a test in that sense, but I remember a beautiful interaction which happened in Thrai Vrindavan once.
Mm.
And Swami asked a student to speak, and he spoke about Swami's omnipresence.
Mm.
Right? He was talking of how his parents back in Bombay were feeling Swami's presence in their house, and how when he goes for a vacation or he is going to visit somebody, how he feels Swami's presence.
Mm.
So he gave this entire speech on Swami's omnipresence, and this boy was from the Prashant Nilayam campus, and it was in the summer, and this interaction was happening in Thrai Vrindavan, right? So after the speech, he went to take Swami's blessings, and then Swami started conversing with him. And in the course of that conversation, this boy said, Swami, please come to Prashant Nilayam, we're missing you there. And immediately Swami said, till now you spoke about Swami's omnipresence, and now you're telling me to come to Prashant Nilayam as though I'm not there. So literally this boy was caught. Okay. Yeah. And then Swami went on to say, see, this is what I keep telling, there's no unity of thought, word indeed. You only platform heroes and all of that Swami went on to say.
Yes.
So this boy was quiet because he was, he was trapped, literally.
Yeah.
But then, Swami suddenly turned to him and said, why did you tell? Why did you tell like that? Tell me now. So this boy answered in a very beautiful one-liner, which really can be framed and put. He said, Swami, your presence is sweeter than your omnipresence. that was so beautifully put. Because Swami just started blushing. I still remember that scene so vividly.
Yeah.
Because that was the most perfect thing to say.
Yes,
literally captured the emotion in the hearts of everybody there.
Beautiful, yeah.
Right. So dear listeners, we'll leave with that and do join us again next week. We'll hopefully be concluding this discourse in the next episode. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. On the other side of few minutes, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu with the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you. Jai Sainam.